You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Of course, you can reach us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org. And we've been talking about the delicate choreography at the Democratic National Convention in Denver between the Clintons and Barack Obama. But there's some even more delicate choreography that will take place next week in the Twin Cities of Minnesota as President Bush and John McCain get together at the Republican Convention. How will Bush and McCain get together, if at all? How will the Bush administration go down in history? It's a delicate piece of choreography and a very big piece of history. And contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, Peter Baker, has spent months posing the question and compiling interviews of President Bush's former and current campaign advisors, aides, even Bush Sr., for a piece all about the Bush legacy. His piece, The Final Days, appears in this Sunday's New York Times Magazine. Joining us from Washington, Peter Baker, good morning.
Good morning. How are you today?
You know, you describe something called Bush World in your piece, which is absolutely fascinating. And it describes a sort of inner circle of people in the Bush administration who are quietly and in some cases intently thinking about legacy. Who is Bush World these days?
Well, Bush World obviously extends beyond just the White House itself to the people who think of Bush as, you know, as their leader, in effect. I mean, it extends from Karl Rove to Dan Bartlett, people who were aides in the White House in the past, to the president's friends in Texas, people who are now leading the effort to create a new library for him at Southern Methodist University in Dallas. And, you know, these are people who very much want to do what they can to define President Bush's legacy in the terms most acceptable to him.
Is there consensus? I mean, did you find consensus? And most particularly, how is the president himself dealing with this issue?
Well, you know, what he would tell you if you were to ask him and he were to come on your program, he would say that he's not thinking about his legacy. He's sprinting to the finish. He's taking advantage of every moment he has left in office. But if you actually listen to his speeches and interviews these days, you hear more and more creeping into his conversation. You know, he's more willing to give his definition of how he sees himself in history, which is as somebody who took on tough challenges, didn't flinch in the face of pressure, even if the public was against the things he thought were right. He stood up for principle in his view. Now, you know, obviously there's another narrative there, one of a president who didn't succeed and who's left the country in a tough position. You know, and we won't really know the answer to that for, you know, quite a while. We've seen over time many presidents' place in history change by the year, by the decade, as events sort of refocus and put their events and their administrations through a different prism.
Yeah, well, certainly. But in your piece, you describe some very interesting changes going on in emphasis and in going off script in presidential appearances that does seem to suggest something's going on.
Well, he's getting a little wistful as time draws nearer. You know, a president who doesn't like to ever deviate from the very meticulous schedule they come up with lately has been more willing to, like, you know, stop the motorcade, and if you see the lemonade stand outside of a fundraiser, he's been more a little bit more reflective. He's not a very introspective fella, he would tell you, but he's been a little bit more reflective in some of his talks to fundraisers and interviewers and so forth. And you even aides say that they see the beginning of somebody who sort of sees the end in sight. One friend told me he detects the president's Texas accent coming back into his voice a little bit as he begins to imagine life in Dallas coming up in just 5 months.
What surprised you about the people around him and what they would share with you regarding this concern for legacy or even the complications with John McCain?
Well, in terms of legacy, what's interesting is we talked to a lot of people who were close to the president. They all feel better these days about what's happening in Iraq. They feel like the president's decision to send more troops a year and a half ago has been vindicated. And yet there's sort of this sense of what if among a lot of these people. What if we had changed strategy earlier? What if we had dumped Rumsfeld earlier? What if we had sent more troops earlier? What if we had prevented Iraq from getting as bad as it got? Would that have changed not just things for Iraq, but things for the Bush administration in a broader way? Had Iraq not been so devastating. Had not been so bad through 2005 and 2006, could President Bush have gotten other things done? Could he have had more success in pushing legislation on Social Security or immigration or tax reform, things that he really cared about, things that went nowhere, at least in part because the country was so sour about the war?
Peter, you make a really interesting point when you say that he's arguably the most disliked president in seven decades, according to the polls. But you also report that some of his closest aides say perhaps there's license in that, in him not having to care so much about where public opinion is.
Well, that's right. It's not just that he's unpopular. It's that he has been down for so long at this point that I think that they've become sort of inured to it, you know. He has been under 50% in the polls for, you know, his entire second term. No president has ever, you know, gone so long, so far, so down. And I think at a certain point it became sort of like, okay, there's nothing to do about it. So let's just do what we think is the right thing to do, regardless of the polls, even maybe a badge of honor to some extent, because President Bush looks at leadership, I think, as a test, as a trial. And to be a great leader is someone to have overcome great adversity and in some fashion this low public standing is...
Peter, really quickly, Bush's dad spoke about this. What did Bush 41 say about this persistent downturn?
Well, that's right. I asked him about this once at a little event up at Kennebunkport, and he said, you know, we talked about how his place in history had changed somewhat, obviously, in the 15 years since he's been out of office, and did that have any lessons for his son? He said he thought it does, but he hasn't talked about that with the current president.
They're very circumspect, and they're definitely waiting for the verdict of history. Peter Baker, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Peter Baker, contributing writer for New York Times Magazine. His piece, The Final Days, is the cover story this Sunday.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.